Winter is coming, and so are spoilers for Game of Thrones.
To the gates!
Any man dies with a clean sword, I'll rape his fucking corpse!
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. Today I have with me Tom.
Hi there.
And Eric.
Hello.
And this is a special episode of Sci-Fi Party Line, and it is our second recording about the Game of Thrones series finale. And I'm doing this because we did this twice. I think we did it for Avatar and Wonder Woman. And now we're doing it for Game of Thrones series finale. It's that big. Eric and Tom has had opinions, and they appeared on our little mini podcast South of the Wall for Game of Thrones. And so I wanted to get their final opinions on how it all went down. I have some more thoughts too, so I wanted to add some stuff in there, so it's fine. I want to start off with Tom. I'm really interested in hearing what you thought, like how it all went down. How do you feel?
Let's see. It feels a bit rushed. I'd give the wrap up a B. I'd give it a B. And I'm kind of just a casual fan of the show. Like, I have no huge expectations. I haven't read the books, but I do consider it. I've been enjoying it as ongoing entertainment for quite a number of years, but I do feel like the wrap up was rushed. I think that there were things that needed more depth and that needed a good example is Bran in the past few seasons has become almost unlikable. And kind of weird, and they were struggling to. He had like 3 seconds to make himself likable again and smile a little bit, so that you would be happy seeing him take the throne. And it really, really is pushing it. And that's been going on this whole season. I think even with Jaime, after such a long investment in Jaime and Brienne and him turning a moral corner. To just have it fall apart because they're looking for some last-minute drama was a little—it was a little too rushed and quick, and so not quite believable. But I don't think the writing's. I've heard a lot of people really upset, but as a casual fan, I think the writing is about the same. I think it's just been rushed a little too much. That's all.
Okay. And then I had to get Eric too, because I have no idea what Eric would say and how he would respond to the ending. So I had to hear what Eric had to say as well. So, Eric?
Concerning primarily the last episode, the finale, I mostly liked it. Mostly good. I'm mostly fine with it. It seems to me that most people I know on social media are quite upset. I haven't talked to all of them. I think I kind of get why they're upset, but those reasons in particular don't really bother me. Wasn't a perfect ending, but I was mostly satisfied with it. It was okay.
Okay. I know that my initial response was that it was better than the Lost finale, and it was better than Dexter's finale. And that's saying a lot because I just was really outraged at those two finales in particular in recent memory. So, I mean, I feel like after Daenerys turned a corner, we were put into a corner, and it was just only so many places they can go with the finale. And I hear, you know, several people saying that, oh, well, you know, they couldn't please everybody and they, you know, can only do so many things and they want to make it realistic. Blah, blah, blah. And some of those opinions fall short to me because, A, they could write whatever they want and they made certain choices that, like Tom pointed out, were really rushed and it just, at the pace, the breakneck pace, it just, it wasn't sitting right for me. I think as much as the buildup was around Jon Snow, to have his end, the way it did, it was not satisfying. I don't know what would have, like, for him to ascend to the throne, kind of, I guess, would have been problematic. But I felt like we were strung along with this really complicated story, backstory of him and him being the, you know, golden child that would fix the Seven Kingdoms. I mean, then, like, they just sent him to with the wildlings with Ginger Boo and Ghost, which he finally petted and, you know, reunited with in a normal human way. But it just, like, they could have written that several different ways. I didn't find it believable that Grey Worm had so much power and sway over the decision of Jon not becoming King of the Seven Kingdoms. I don't think it was reasonable. I also don't understand what the dragon did. I liked it in the moment. It was just like, fuck this damn throne. It's the people, whatever, this damn throne. I'm just going to burn it, you know. And at the moment, I thought, you know, this dragon is the most reasonable person or entity in this entire freaking series, to be honest. But, I mean, so when Eric, when you say it wasn't a perfect ending or you were fine with it, like what exactly and why and how did you come to that?
When I say it wasn't perfect, a lot of those things tie in with things that Tom was just saying. Like, okay, the way most of the characters turned out and the way their arcs went by the end, see, I was fine with that. But as Tom pointed out, things were rushed. So I think that's what is making many people feel... Well, there's two things making most people uncomfortable, I think. Well, one is most people wanted either Dany or Jon to be on top at the end. And if not them, maybe Sansa or someone else who's another favorite. And it's none of that. So that's one thing I think that bothers people. The other thing is, with what we get and it being rushed, that makes it even more unsettling, I guess, for a lot of people. Because people feel blindsided. See, I don't feel as blindsided as everyone else, so I'm not so bothered by that. And also, I'm not bothered by the it's not Jon or Dany thing, because that felt too obvious to me, which that doesn't mean it's bad if it was obvious. It just means it would have been more like many other things. Again, that doesn't make it bad. But this makes it not like many other things. And in this case, I think it works in that way. I liked, and see, that's the thing. If they would have laid it out and stretched it out and not made it felt so rushed and developed things more, like before Bran, you know, comes out of nowhere, I think this is the fine balance that the makers had to deal with, because if they fleshed it out more, then it just would have telegraphed it. So I guess they made like a gamble. We're not going to be able to flesh this out.
What do you mean telegraphed it? What do you mean? What does that mean?
Because then it would have made it much more obvious, like Bran is the obvious choice. So in order to try to surprise us, they had to play it close to the vest, which means they couldn't sow all those seeds. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? They had to make a decision, you know, before they started making season 8. You know, they can lay it all out so people go, oh yeah, okay, it is Bran. But they wanted an element of surprise, and it surprised me for sure. And like I said, the only way you don't get that surprise is if they really lay out the track, but then you see it coming, it's no longer a surprise. You see, it's like a it's,
yeah, it's like I get a paradox, that, but a lot of things we so, saw coming, so they made though, a gamble.
What's that?
A lot of things we saw coming, like, we saw the chemistry between Dany and Jon, and we knew that they were going to get together. Yes. And they got together. So yes, we saw that coming, it was fine. It's, I don't think...
Yes, that is that.
But yeah, I understand, fine. But I think in their effort to, like, not to be obvious or whatever, they just did a whole bunch of things that they couldn't have in order to make it a satisfying ending. Either they could have went all the way and made it a brutal Game of Thrones ending where we would have just been shot to hell, or wrap it up in a heroic way. Well, this way is just, it feels mediocre, and that's at best to me.
this may not be the ending that people wanted.
I get it. Yes, you're right.
It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me.
I get you.
I mean, it makes sense to me. Like, it couldn't be Daenerys. It couldn't be Jon. And there was prophecies. And actually, the prophecy was more or less followed, which is, even though Jon doesn't end up being the king of everything, he was still the one who saved the kingdom, which matches the prophecy. And when people were following the prophecy, they all thought the Night King was the big bad that Jon had to kill. But it turns out it was Dany all along. And I get it. People don't like that. But to me, I'm like, no, okay, it makes sense then. It makes sense. And see, I like that. I like that at the beginning of season 8, my question was, who's the biggest threat? Is it the Night King or is it Cersei? Turns out it was Daenerys. And I like that. I like it personally, going, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I like that. And again, there's no way they could have surprised me unless they rushed it, I guess. I mean, again, because if they lay it all out, then it'll just be like, oh, obvious. Oh, okay, it's just going to be Bran or somebody else. And yeah, it sucks because I miss when Jon was having, when his character was having his literal and metaphorical rebirth, where all of a sudden, like after he got resurrected and the Battle of the Bastards and all those great things, you think, man, Jon is just such on a roll. And yeah, and like I miss that. And I, you know, probably in my mind, if I picked my favorite, then Jon would have ended up being the king or something. But again, the way it played out, especially in season 8, Jon, I mean, once he joined up with Daenerys, it just could not be him anymore, based on his actions and the way things have gone for many episodes. Jon lost his legitimacy episode by episode by episode by episode. So by the time we got to this episode, I was like, nah, it can't be him anymore. It can't be him anymore because of the preceding 10 episodes or something.
And why?
Why? Because, oh my gosh, all the thing. Okay, because younger Jon, or I mean earlier seasons Jon, would always stand up for like innocent people time and time and time again. And he did all the way up from the beginning of his character until the Battle of the Bastards. After that, and after he fell in love with Daenerys, he lost all that edge, and he started witnessing, and Tyrion as well, started to witness atrocity after atrocity, and they said and did nothing when they were like the people most in the position to do something at the time. And this happened over and over again, especially in season 8. So at that point, it made it clear to me Jon cannot be king anymore.
Yeah, because he didn't step up.
But does it require that him to step up, or does it require him to be the legitimate heir to the throne? Because that's two different things. Like, do we want a hero leader that we elected, or are we going to go with how they've been doing things in King's Landing and he is by blood the rightful heir to the throne? It doesn't matter what a fucking ex-slave who has a whole bunch of men say, even though he's pissed off. He doesn't get, like Tyrion said, he doesn't get a say.
Well, I think first of all, you mentioned before that you're wondering about Grey Worm's power. I think by the time they were judging Tyrion and figuring out what to do with Tyrion, clearly he had grown a beard, it had been a month or so, and everybody at that point had mobilized their own armies and were not looking for further war. But Grey Worm, his army's under him now. So he holds quite a bit of power, I think, and he was holding King's Landing with his army. So
it
wasn't like they were following the old form of government anymore. They needed a new one, and that's why Sam came up with democracy. And
I get that he had immediate power at that time, but he had no status. And then, if you say he has all this power, and status doesn't matter, then why is it when Tyrion said he doesn't matter, and that they start taking votes, they didn't get the vote of every person, but they got the votes of the old power structure? You know what I mean? It seems weird to me that on one hand we want to play with, oh, the whole of everything, it was a different power structure. But then when it comes time to vote for a new king, we're going to lean back on what has been established. I feel like you're trying to have it. Well, not you personally, Tom, but I felt like they were trying to have it both ways and write a story. And it just, I don't know. It just didn't sit right with me. Like, nobody, does that even sound normal? Or
I definitely think in that scene where they were decided, where they were all lined up in their chairs there on the committee, I definitely also had the feeling like, okay, again, that felt rushed. I didn't know where things stood exactly. And I had to just kind of intuit that, okay, everybody's got their armies, but they're not doing anything with them right now. And they're kind of at a big stalemate. Because there's no leader. But they were also looking for somebody who had the people behind them, and Jon Snow hadn't manned up early enough, and the people, he was an enemy to too much of the kingdom at that point, because he had killed Daenerys. So he couldn't be it, and they were looking for somebody that just was liked by everyone and had a good story, and that happened to be Bran.
All right, back now.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm with Eric a little bit. I don't think I care about who's on the throne. I think it had to do with telling the story well enough to make me enjoy the, you know, whoever winds up being there. Bran could have used a whole nother season of development so we would figure out who the hell he is again. Because I felt when they chose him, I felt like it fell flat. It felt like a disappointment until they started making him more likable. As he spoke a little bit, you get the feeling that he is somewhere down there. He's a kind person and he's going to be a good ruler. And that wasn't evident at all. Like, you certainly weren't rooting for him.
Yeah. And I was listening. I've already been, you know, watching videos on YouTube and listening to other podcasts, hearing other people's reactions. Something I heard not too long ago by someone else was like, if you this idea of a dark brand theory, which is, so him being the three-eyed raven, and we can assume that maybe he foresaw almost everything that happened in season 8. And if you keep that in mind and go back to the beginning, like, it could be evil brand. Like, this was all his plan from the very beginning. I mean, since he's been the three-eyed raven. Because he set all the wheels in motion that led it. He told Jon, probably knowing that Jon would tell Sansa, that Sansa would tell Tyrion and Varys, and then that would make Daenerys go mad queen, and then right. Jon would have to kill. So, like, Bran, you could look at as like what Littlefinger did in the early seasons. That's kind of what Bran did at the end, if we assume he foresaw almost all of this.
He implied that he did foresee all of it, because he said that's why he was there.
Mm-hmm. And this reminds me of something else, unrelated to Game of Thrones, but I've been reading these like different history books lately, and it talks about when you talk about like Machiavellian type things, or trying to be like the king of the mountain or whatever, and there's a strategy called like the cat's paw, where you're not powerful enough to take out your enemy yourself, so you get someone else to do it, but you make them think it's their idea or their will, not because they're doing you a favor.
Right.
And if you look at it that way, you know, let's pretend evil Bran, three-eyed Raven, wants to be king. Well, I can't, because here's Daenerys, and she has a really good stake to the throne. Plus, she has three dragons, and I'm an invalid in a wheelchair. What am I going to do? Well, there's this guy, the Night King. Maybe if Daenerys has to run into him, maybe he'll take out a dragon or two. All right, sounds good. All right, that plays out. Okay, well, we still have Daenerys. What else can I do? Well, you know, maybe if things go a certain type of way, Jon will take care of that. And then at the end of the day, who's left? It's just me. You know, so it's kind of interesting if you think about it, because he set it all up, and it's masterful. That's why I say it makes sense. Even though no one that I know of was ever Team Bran, or ever found him particularly likable.
Well, we didn't. It's not that he wasn't likable. It's like, up until the last freaking episode, we didn't even know he was there.
That's true too.
Right? Yeah. It's like,
but see, I like that. I like that thing of this, like, enemy in plain sight, or but why would it
be evil for him to have mastered all this? Like, what's the evil? Like,
well, just the fact just that he's like behind it. It's like Palpatine in the Phantom Menace. He's just sitting back and letting everybody do things, and he ends up being emperor in the end.
That's a really cool idea. I don't think the writers are as clever as that.
So it's not that the writers came up with this brilliant idea. The groundwork had always been laid out since the very, very beginning of the show, or if you read the books. And so George R. R. Martin, yes, he was in discussions with the TV producers, I mean, pretty much the whole way, and basically said, for the main characters, it has to go this way. I mean, because I just laid the groundwork. So supposedly if and when the books ever do get published, the main broad strokes will be the same, and it will end up the same. He said perhaps things that happen with secondary characters and other people will be quite different, but the main story, this is what he always intended. So that leads credence to, you know, the three-eyed raven. Mm-hmm. It was all by design.
Well, that lets me know that I don't have to read the books looking for something different. Because I was under the impression that because the books were not written yet, or the we had, you know, passed the point of where George R. R. Martin had written, that the writers were free to do whatever they pleased. I hadn't known that that he intended to pull this bullshit. So
I don't see it as BS at all. Again, I think the main broad strokes of the entire show, it all makes sense to me. I wasn't as the most pleased with the actual execution of season 8, but I mean, that is what it is. But
so then I guess I'm responding to the rushness of it, I guess, because it just felt unbelievable. And I do want to go back over something that I said earlier that kind of bothered me, is that I was kind of upset that an ex-slave would actually have something to say. That's not where I was going with that. Yes, everybody, I feel, in democracy has a say, but I felt that in Westeros and all of them, that they had never given somebody like that any power or any say, and it just felt odd to me that in this instance, that they'd be all like, oh, we can't move past Grey Worm because
blah, blah, blah. I was bothered by that too, but I think the only reason in the context of the story why he did have any say was because he still had a significant, he was basically now in charge of the significant force.
Yeah, that Daenerys made him the leader of her army.
I get it. But I felt that too, though. A lot of them, it felt like he picked up more after the battle at Winterfell, because I felt like a lot of those people were killed in the battle at Winterfell, and then a lot of them were killed when they went to fight the first time at King's Landing. I agree with that
too. And again, this is just has to do with the execution on screen, because supposedly the makers have said that perhaps half of Daenerys' total forces were lost in the Battle of Winterfell. It just didn't really come across that way, you know, with what was shown.
Yeah.
And that was just, you know, artistic license, whatever. Because I know everyone's been talking about that too. But like I said, so Grey Worm was effectively in charge of the remaining of Daenerys' forces, and they were basically occupying King's Landing. And I think the only reason he had a say in anything, well, there's two reasons. One, because even though he probably couldn't beat all of them put together, they're just trying to avoid a war. And number two, he had Jon basically as a prisoner, like a hostage. So therefore, I think that's how he got to have a lot of say.
And that's
all right. That's, you know what? That's good. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's also historically accurate. I mean, when the Roman generals got out of control because their men were beholden only to them. And that's why the Roman Republic fell. So yeah, there were all these generals going around with their own armies,
you know,
doing whatever they wanted and not following whatever, you know, the laws of the Senate were. So it's not inaccurate, really, historically.
Well, you know what, Eric said something that it just didn't click to me, is that John was a hostage this whole time. It was there. That, it was obvious. It was obvious after he said it just now, but I wish they would have held it up a little bit more, and then it kind of would have clicked in my brain instead of us being shocked. You know, it was just like, he is a hostage and nobody's going anywhere. We're going to murder him if we don't get some answers. So that makes sense now. Okay.
And that also, because people wondered, well, why didn't Grey Worm just kill John instantly? And
well, that is a question.
Maybe Grey Worm had enough sense to realize the importance of keeping John alive.
Well, he was smart, so.
That's what I'm saying. See,
it just wasn't executed like Tom said. Made sense. Yeah.
It's just, I still think overwhelmingly people were upset because they wanted Danny or John or both to live happily ever after. And that was 100% not what happened. And
I mean, I knew that wouldn't happen because it was just like, it was, they were butting heads too much. But, and I'm going to agree with Tom yet once again and Eric that we needed more space to tell this story in a way that just wasn't traumatic as.
And like I said, it was a trade-off because they could have milked it more. But again, how could you possibly then keep any surprises? Because no matter what you plan to do, you would get, okay, this is where.
Did we need a surprise though for the ending?
Yeah,
I liked it. That's why I like this. That's why I'm thrilled by this. That's why.
I thought the Danny versus John. I thought that was that was really satisfying to me.
Really?
Yeah. I like that. I like that tragic. I think that they let it go too far where John, you stop respecting him because he lets it go so far.
Yeah.
But in general, the idea of him watching his aunt / girlfriend.
There you go, Tom.
Aunt Khaleesi descend into madness. That was really cool. And when he realizes what the only solution is, and has what I guess is like the worst breakup ever. He's like, and when I love that line. Look, you're always going to be my queen. But look, here's the thing. I think we should just be friends. Also, just as a formality, I'm going to have to stab you. But yeah, that scene was really cool.
I thought it was good too.
Yeah, I did think that was good. Where I differ with Eric a little bit though is that I don't think you can get entertainment from making people wait for a resolution that they're hoping for, and giving them that resolution or giving them a surprise. And if there are too many surprises, it feels a little cheap because it's an easy thing to do to just surprise people and switch gears.
Well,
but I think that when you build up a resolution, and I'll bring up the example again of Jamie and Brienne, they brought you to that point and it took so long. And when that resolution finally came where they got together, that was so satisfying. I really didn't, the surprise of him just changing his mind felt cheap to me.
And yes, that was
a good example of a bad surprise.
I said that previously too. That was a bad move. I mean, because it sort of disrespects a lot of Brienne's overall story arc. Like, that's super weird.
I mean, to get
to that point and then take that other turn, and it betters Jamie's arc at the expense of Brienne's arc.
Yeah, they're looking for short-term drama at the expense of these characters that you're following. You've invested so much time in.
But making Dany the Mad Queen was at the expense of her shit too. I mean, we spent a long time trying to get her to not be the Mad Queen. She spent a long time.
Yeah.
She was back and forth. Like, I can see how she did this. It was obvious that she had some questionable decisions on the way.
Yeah, we saw this coming.
We saw it coming. It's like not a surprise. Wrong. Right, it wasn't a surprise, but it was a surprise that in that moment she would choose to burn women and children only to say that, I didn't want to be weak.
Right.
And
that was a little rushed too. Yeah. She was liberating them apparently.
I don't think people are giving enough, to the idea of how Daenerys really felt the character in that moment when that switch went off. I don't think people really appreciate.
We don't get it. We don't get it because we don't get to hear what she says. We don't really understand. All we know is that she may or may not have eaten. She may have or may not have been slightly poisoned. She could have been super irritated at the death at Miss Sunday. She could have. Yes, she was mourning.
It's everything that. Nothing ever came together that way for the Daenerys character in a negative way as it did in that moment ever in the series before, because it wasn't just Melisandre. It was losing Jorah. It was losing the love of Jon. It was having her other trusted advisors both betray her, Tyrion and Varys. She had absolutely no one. That had never happened to that extent ever before. Why are people underplaying that? I don't understand. And then on top of that, her being who she is and being a Targaryen and having it in her blood and all the things, all Daenerys' character has always felt screwed over with her own position in the world and her own life the entire series. And the entire series, she always had trusted people who aided her in so many incalculable ways the whole way. So why would we be so surprised when that entire support system was completely taken
not
away?
Not entire. She had Tyrion telling her and Jon telling her that these people...
They both betrayed her too, though.
That doesn't mean you need to kill women and children just because broke your heart. That's ridiculous. Nobody does that.
They hadn't gotten the chance to see how ethically compromised she was until that
people
moment.
People do that, what Kat said people don't do. So that's number one. But number two, again, it's not only the broken heart. It's everything I just said. It's 8 years of stuff. It's not just that one thing. This is why is it only one thing? When it's
because she's had so many other awful things happen to her that it's like...
That's what led to this. That's exactly what led to this.
But she was winning. She won. She could have just went to the Red Keep where Daenerys was, had somebody demand her head, and decapitated her. She didn't need to kill every.
She already stated before the battle that she already had her doubts about that. She already, because even if she quote unquote won, as you said, she already stated that she already was not believing that that would be a win. And she said why.
What was it?
Because the people do not love her, they love Jon. Because of what Varys did, because Varys told the world that she's the illegitimate ruler. Why are we dismissing this? That she knew this, and when
so burning women and children is going to make you the legitimate
ruler? Right, but she said they're not going to love me, then they're going to fear me. So she thought, well, then this is my only play left. Because she didn't think that playing by the quote-unquote rules, the way everyone's suggesting, she lost complete faith in that. So in her mind, that was the only thing left to her. And there was no one else in the world that she trusted who could convince her that that was not true. I'm just saying this is what was on the show. I'm just saying what happened. And when Tyrion was telling her, hey, if you hear the bells, yada, 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 chill out, yada, she wasn't even paying attention to him. She probably wasn't even conscious of what he was saying in that moment because she was only in her own thoughts. Go back and watch it. Saying it's there on the screen. I'm just taking what's there. And so it completely makes sense to me.
It did feel like a natural progression to me as well, although I get your disappointment, Kat, in her. But I think that's what was going on is we never knew where on the ethical spectrum she really was. And there were always these moments where, for example, when her dragons killed the village kid, the guy's son or whatever, and she had to make up for that. There were these little things that were hints that we don't really know where she stands, and she has such a black and white godlike view of the world. She sees herself as a god that she's really difficult to control. And I think that was I think that was part of her personality from very early on, and something I always expected. Like, oh, she's always a moment away from snapping and being a really bad person, and the people around her aren't seeing it. So, and even when they were gathered around that map working out their battle plans, she was being a really crappy project manager. She was just like, the Tyrion was like, okay, here's what we might want to do. We might want to starve them out. We might want to starve them out and then bring some ships up the coast. And meet. And she was like, I'll tear them out by the roots. And they were like, all right, could you just give it a rest for a second? Just give it a rest for a second. And she couldn't, you know? And that was like, these red flags kept going up.
Yes, it's just, I get it. People love her, and it was cool. And something Tom said a while back in this discussion, I was going to say, because he was talking about there's like those crowd pleasing moments, and then there's like the surprise elements. And see, I guess being contrarian to like what a lot of other people feel, because back in season 6 and 7, when everyone was like, woo, finally things are paying off, and Jon's kicking ass and Daenerys kicking ass, and everyone was high-fiving each other a year ago on Sci-Fi Party. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm not really that thrilled by this. Not because I'm unhappy that they're winning. It's just, this is not exciting to me. Because this is just writing your fanfic and having it come true. Oh, and then they killed all the baddies, and they all survived. I get it, and that's fine. I'm not saying we shouldn't have crowd-pleasing moments. But that was then, and now we got this. And so that's why I'm a little bit happier with this, despite its...
You're just happy execution. Because people are pissed off and you didn't care.
No, I don't know.
You like it when the majority of people, because if I'm being honest, anybody I talk to has you guys' opinions, whether they just were satisfied with it and they like it. And to me, I don't really know another person that was kind of out. I'm not outraged. It's just I feel like I felt the writer's room. You know, and I wasn't inside of the story because I felt them trying to steer the ship in a way that I just felt them, you know what I mean? As opposed to being caught up in the story. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another reason why I was just, it felt like a letdown because it just felt, I don't know, it felt like fanfic at the end that either they could have, I felt like
not the king.
Fanfic could be anything, honestly.
No, it can be, but I'm saying that's usually, you know, it goes to making the fan happy.
Yeah, but
fanfic isn't usually, let me write this horrible version of my favorite show.
I've only seen horrible fanfics.
So. No, but I'm saying that's not what the person has in mind when they
yeah,
when they
write themselves. Exactly. Exactly. Anyway.
Yeah, I think when things are as rushed as they are in this last season, that they can't do the mechanics with the story that they need to make you real, to make you not see behind the curtain.
I felt like I was seeing behind. And so do we know why this was rushed? Like what, why?
The rumor I heard is that the two writers were off to write the next Star Wars trilogy. I mean, that they wanted to end the show early.
That sounds like a rumor to me. Yeah. I've heard that rumor, but I mean, look, like
that's a legitimate question, because I still don't understand why we needed to rush this if it was going to be this weird.
Again, I don't know that it's actually rushed. I know it all feels rushed, and the situations happened in a rushed way. But as I said last time I was on this podcast, I don't think it's a matter of this was a six episode season. It was a 13 episode season because 7 and 8 were all 7, and you know what I'm saying? This was season 7, part 2. And I know that doesn't really excuse anything, but I'm just saying this was 13 episodes. And they told a lot of things, and then that's great. I mean, and probably why some things feel really fleshed out, like in 5 and 6, is because things were stretched out, relatively speaking. Like, because they were using as much as they could from books 4 and 5. And so there's a lot going on in the show in seasons 5 and 6. I don't know. But, and again, they didn't, regardless of how many episodes they have, they didn't have the in-depth writer's blueprint, meaning the novels, to distill. They were just given the outline. So then they had to, you know, go from the outline instead of going from a dense text. So that's probably going to have an effect as well.
It is what it is. Outline. It felt like
it went quick, but I'm fine with it. And I think it's a good end. I liked, again, I wished things would have ended up better for John, but I get this this idea instead that he's forever going to be screwed over in a way. I mean, I guess that's his life period. I mean,
even a better ending would have been Daenerys in her final end and decapitating Jon right there in King's Landing. I would have been good with that because it felt like that was the only other way that she would have gotten ascended to the throne, and I would have been happy with that ending too, where she's just the ultimate ruler and everybody had to bow down to her.
Oh, he's really? Dead.
Yeah, I would have been happy with that too. Ooh.
No, I never liked her enough for that.
Well, I mean, it's not that I liked her. It's just that I wanted something to make a little bit more sense, because I felt like if she felt that Tyrion was betraying her, she also felt a way about Jon. I just don't know how Jon was able to get to her.
Didn't
have a pat down. And
she felt betrayed by him, you know, in the love sense, but she was completely and utterly shocked beyond belief by what happened to her. And I liked that. I liked... Not because,
but I'm talking about, I think, wouldn't Grey Worm or any other ones, they wouldn't have let him in there without anybody else. And like, I felt like...
Wait, they don't know that he did any betrayal?
What I'm saying is that she always has a guard around when anybody's around, especially after the last words they have. I don't understand why she didn't have men in the room with her.
Kim Kardashian's bodyguard is suspicious of Kanye West, and he's just going to jump him for some unknown reason. Like, what? Based on what? Why would Grey Worm do that? Why would he be protecting her from, like, her love as far as anyone else is concerned? That doesn't make any sense.
Didn't they have a fight or something?
Coming. Because she was blinded by everything else in her mind. She never thought for a second that Jon would do this. And I think it's also true that that Jon truly loved her in every sense of the word to the very end, up into him thrusting the blade into her. And I mean, wow. And I think he really did love her. So in a way, you know, I mean, I don't know. Why would they be separating him? Why would they be like, oh my gosh, Jon's going to hurt her? Where does that come from?
I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know. I mean, you make sense. But I don't know. It felt like, why is she alone with...
I agree with Eric in that I think the way they interacted when he stabbed her made sense, and that she's always been a little delusional and she still thinks she can bring Jon around. And you see that where she's almost smiling and thinking everything's okay now. And on Kat's side, Game of Thrones does not do some details well. And that happens a lot, where they kind of skip some details. You know, one was Daenerys just being really bad with the dragons about flying too low and not knowing how to stay at altitude so she doesn't get hit by stuff, and not seeing a whole fleet of ships, not flying over something high to see what's there before you move your army in. I mean, just... stuff that wouldn't make any sense if you really think about it.
Yes, right. I agree. Yeah. There's
and that happened a lot in this show. So.
Absolutely, 100%. That happened a lot.
I mean, I kept expecting her to... a good idea for her when she had the dragon and she was going after King's Landing and when the Golden Fleet was still in the harbor was to... It's good that they finally had her come out of the sun. At least they did that. But the obvious solution... with the castle full of dragon crossbows, was to go in at night, and when people can't fire at you, and just flame everything that could fire at you.
Yes, and I thought the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, come on. So I think again, if you're, they gloss over a lot of stuff like that in the show, and I've gotten used to it, and I just let it go. But it's definitely there, and so when you're a little unhappy with something or something is rushed, your brain keeps going back to that, just like Kat keeps going back to the Grey Worm not patting down Jon Snow. You know, in her mind, come on, you know, bodyguards should do their job, so.
But, and also, I didn't do this, but because other people on YouTube did it for me. If you go back and watch, you know, when Daenerys had her vision in the smoke hut a long time ago of her future. If you go back and watch it, and then keeping in mind what we just saw for the final episode, it actually all lines up pretty nicely. They did stay true to that. As a refresher, she had the vision of being in a almost destroyed throne room. There was a and people always wondered, was it actual snowflakes or was it ashes? And at the end of the penultimate episode, we all thought it was ashes, but it turned out it was actually real snow. In the final episode that was coming in through the the broken roof. And just like in her vision, she gets a hand on the throne, but she never gets to sit in the chair. And that happened both in her vision and in the actual episode. And then what happened in her vision after that was she passed through the wall, or it seemed like she passed through the wall, like that opening, and then she ended up with Khal Drogo and her unborn child.
And
so I guess everyone's taking it now to mean, like, when she passed through the wall, it's not that she literally passed through the wall, but she passed into the afterlife, and then she joined her deceased family in the afterlife, so she finally got with them. So in a way, anyway, her whole vision came out to be true.
That's cool. That's nice planning.
Yeah, George R. R. Martin,
I guess. I guess.
I liked it, and we all know there's going to be prequels and other shows.
I'm not watching that. We're not dedicating any more episodes to fucking Game of
Thrones. I'm definitely watching them.
I think I was more excited because I'm glad it's over. So, I don't know. And I wanted something. I wanted it to be more brutal. Like I said, I wanted John to be decapitated. I wanted just shit to go wrong for people to be pissed off in a real way, not in this mediocre ending bullshit way. I wanted something.
I'm already imagining what could happen in the Game of Thrones universe with Arya's adventures in the New World, except the Game of Thrones version of the New World. I'm already picturing like the Game of Thrones version of indigenous peoples and their temples, except because it's Game of Thrones world, there could be like a little bit of like Mayan magic, and I'm picturing all kinds of crazy things and different types of dragons of the New World and all. Oh man,
I don't care. I'm done.
I'm completely in with it.
Yeah, you can write your fan for.
I like to complain about it, but it's been really good entertainment. And
you know what, Tom? I'm gonna agree with you on that.
Go for a Game of Thrones set in current times, except it's Game of Thrones world.
Oh my God, that's crazy! Stop.
Business magnates. That, you know, there would be like a Jeff Bezos, and there would be like what's his name? Apple guy.
Steve Jobs.
Steve fucking Jobs, dude.
Would it all be in a modern times Game of Thrones world where maybe a little magic is possible, and it would just be like a topsy-turvy world? It'd be amazing. But they would have their history. Like in their history, there was a Jon Snow, and there was, you know, all that would be their history in this.
I'm good with that not happening.
All right.
That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'm good.
Although
with it
I
not.
Think I still, you know, I started out the show not liking too much magic going on. And I think I'm finishing this show with the same opinion. I think that you get sidetracked a little bit with people's superpowers, where you start, it builds up expectations and confusion. So for example, even in the last episode, I was still waiting for Arya to do her face switching stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was expecting Jon to at least try to control the dragon himself, because he's a Targaryen. I was expecting Daenerys to try to have the dragon burn him, and it turns out he's not burnable either. And to have him take her dragon away.
Yeah.
So that she because that's where her power. I mean, there were interesting things that could have happened. Bran had his superpower scanning, and he was also knew the whole timeline. And so there are a couple of problems. One is the expectations that are built by all of these superpowers people have. And the other is that the superpowers become kind of vague and confusing, especially, I mean, with Bran, it gets unclear what the extent of his powers are. And ultimately, I could have done without most of the magic in the show. I don't think Arya's face switching was... I really could have done without that. That warlock who could kind of replicate himself, who looked like Andy Dick, I could have Could have done without that. The mountain acting like Frankenstein. I would have been just as happy with the mountain and the hound fighting each other, even if the mountain hadn't been, you know, reanimated.
I'm of a different mind where I wanted more magic. I was drawn into the show, and I apologize for repeating this if you listened to our last episode, but the White Walkers and the mystery and not knowing where the show could go really drew me in. That first episode that was a teaser, it was all about White Walkers and creepiness. And then the show just like, we're going to dispense with that, and it's not going to be creepy. It's just going to be a soap opera. We're going to have people backstabbing each other. We're going to show rapes. We're going to show baby killing. Shit like that. White Walkers, creepy mystery stuff. That was just to draw you in, idiot, and we're just gonna have just regular.
I like the backstabbing stuff.
I mean, you can see that. You can watch like One Life to Live or General Hospital for that.
I cannot,
because that's pretty much all that.
When
shit
One
is.
Life to Live starts spending $1 million+ per episode, maybe I'll show up.
Well, they did that to was smoke and mirrors to not let you think you were watching freaking One Life to Live. So
I would be okay with that. One Life to Live with $1 million smoke and mirrors. I could be turned on.
Well, you
on
got that. That's what you got. So be
Game
happy.
Of Thrones. Thank All you. Right, yeah. And if they do the prequel, if it is set 1,000 or more years in the prehistory, I feel like there might be some more magic, a lot more magic.
I hope so, but I'm still not gonna watch it
next year.
After all the complaining, I will say that the three episodes before this one, from the night before the battle with the White Walkers to the Daenerys going bananas on King's Landing, those three episodes were just spectacular to
they
look at.
They were.
I mean, were. And they were really, really exciting.
They
and,
were phenomenal.
Yeah, and there were visual stills you could pull out of those that were great. The Hound and...
Eric has to leave. Bye, Eric.
Bye.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap it up, but thanks, Eric.
No problem.
All right. So, yeah... stills. There were lots of stills that you could just pull out.
Yeah. Anyway, there was some gorgeous stuff in there. The scene with the Hound and the mountain, looking up the stairs with the dragon going
yes,
by.
Yes, you texted that me just, that. That was great.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And then, and they built an enormous set for that shot. I mean, they built those stairs like 100 feet high for that.
Wow.
For
I didn't
that
know
shot.
That.
And then the. Another one was the scene with Arya where she's completely stunned just before she sees the horse. She's kind of right in the middle of the picture and she's got the light behind her and she's completely stunned in King's Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were just some gorgeous shots. So yeah, it really is entertaining and absolutely spectacular. I'm certainly willing to forgive all the little nitpicky stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. It was just that I want to be like, episodes 1 through 3, it was no problem. Everything felt right. And so I don't understand how things can feel so different in the next few episodes. Like there was a momentum there and everything just felt like right. You know what I mean? And then other stuff just went off the rails. And I guess it's just like you said, it was rushed. I guess so. I don't know. I don't know what would have made it better for me. But I'll say it again. It was a solid piece of entertainment. It captivated the nation. In fact, the world. So they did a good job as far as that. And as far as I'm concerned, they can like die happy people because they did a great job. We can argue over what we want to see versus what we didn't want to see, but it's still going to go down in history as one of the greatest TV shows that ever was, and rightfully so.
Yeah, it's a big enough TV show that your average spell checker knows the names of the characters.
Yes.
So that's pretty big. That's like the new measure, I think.
Yeah, it is, because like you try to misspell something on your iPhone, it's just like fixes it. It knows what you're doing. Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. So, any final thoughts, Tom?
Final thoughts. I could bring back Theon's sacrifice. How it must have felt to when he was going after the Night King to be trying to kill the only person who could bring his penis back from the dead.
Oh, man, Tom, you did it. Yeah, you went there. I just did not see you going there.
I try to end every episode like that. But I end it there so you can cut it out if you need to.
I am not cutting that out. That is golden. All right. I don't have any final thoughts. It was a great ride, even though we didn't like all of it or whatever. Everybody Absolutely. Has their opinion about it. But guys did a good job. The actors did an amazing job.
Oh, yeah. The acting was great.
Yeah. So,
The acting was great. And even if you get mad at these little things like the little nitpicky stuff we were talking about before, the dialogue in the moment by moment dialogue felt right to me.
Yeah, I agree.
There are a lot of shows where the moment by moment dialogue just doesn't feel like something people would really say. You know, you go, nobody would say that in that situation. And in this show, it always felt like real people saying real things to each other in the moment. And the actors are so good. And you put those two things together and it's hard not to get sucked in.
Yeah. I will say that, yeah, none of what the actors did was unbelievable except for Bran. I'm sorry. He just was not, I couldn't get behind whatever they tried to do with him. It just didn't work for me. Because nobody like said anything about his weirdness, nobody really addressed it, and all right, of a sudden it's true. Just like, yeah, let's make him king. But I'm like, dude, are we still changing his diaper, or yeah, is he cogent? Like, what is?
Right. Have you talked to him recently?
Yeah.
But that was a little weird. That was just another example of just too much, too fast. Like,
yeah.
And they did try. They knew it was a problem because they tried to have him be a little more social.
Bless him. And he was eventually. Like, you could tell, like, his whole personality kind of changed. And it was like, oh, shit, he's sober now. Like, or
he's going to be fine. Yeah.
What's happening now? Yeah. But then, you know, his sister did not have to put him on blast that way. He cannot have children. And I'm just like, fuck you. That was rude. It was rude. She did not have to treat him that way. He didn't say anything. He was just sitting in his chair like, fuck, she put me on blast. Anyway, yeah, the actors and their dialogue, when they were given whatever they were given, they acted it and it felt right. So that, at least we didn't have that problem where it was just ridiculous. So, you know, I go down in history as saying that while it had its problems and I would have wanted something better or different, still at the end of the day, would I give it a C? I'd give it a B minus.
Yeah?
Yeah. I wouldn't give it a C. A C is just rude. A B, B minus. We'll see, you know, whatever. But
Have to give it I'd give it a B plus. B or a B plus.
Yeah.
So. Overall. Just for, I mean, it was great entertainment and that's.
Yeah.
I think there's a point where so many people are watching it and people's expectations are so high.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And I never really felt that way about it. I just enjoyed it and I didn't become, you know, a super fan or anything. So
my thing is, hey, the first three episodes were solid and they were people pleasers. So what happened? Like what was the turn? Like they had the wherewithal to know how to make those first three seasons feel whatever they did in them, they felt right. And so it felt like they put an extra effort to do whatever they did in the final three episodes. And we just felt it. Like, you know what I mean? It felt like two different people or two different minds of teams were in charge of it. So, I mean, beating a dead horse.
Yep.
Not going to do it. So thanks guys for listening to our second whiny session about Game of Thrones that we love really and blah, 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 blah. But have a website. It is scifipartyline.com. We have voicemail 773-336-2686. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on iTunes, we're on Google Play, and we're on Spotify. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we will see you at the party next time for the throne.